Back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. The show name is a reference to how many great Astros' last name begin with the letter B who were playing back in the 90s when they were not winning World Series. Bagwell, Biggio, Barry, Bell, and eventually Bergman. You might not remember Barry and Bell, but trust me, you'll remember Blank and Brenham. Here they are now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
That's right. What is your least favorite excuse? The Astros use discomfort. All of a sudden, the back of the baseball card's a new one. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line for Lawrence in Orlando. Lawrence, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me. Listen to you every day. Start off with my most hated excuse. It's another Bagwell. He's a professional. He'll figure it out. I hate that. If you've lost your touch, you've lost your touch. I don't care how professional you are.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then real quick, you guys can talk about it. I know it's been rumored in some media, but I don't think it would happen as much as I would love it to. Why don't we go for a bat and a pitcher and Ohtani? Is there any option you see that happening? And I'm going to hang up and listen to y'all.
Appreciate it, Lawrence. I love Shohei Ohtani.
Yes,
he's my favorite non-Astro, maybe in the last 3 decades. That might be a little bit too much. But I love his uniqueness. He's a unicorn. He's one of the better offensive players in all of Major League Baseball, and he's one of the better pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. I think he's the most valuable player in all of baseball. He is a rental. If he is traded by the Angels, I'd be surprised if he gets traded because I think the Angels' demand is going to be very, very high. They're still somewhat in the playoff race. I don't think that's going to go anywhere because their ball club's solid enough to hang around. I do think it's in the Angels' best interest to trade him because I don't think there'll be a playoff team, and I do think he is leaving in the offseason, so get something while you can. I don't think that even though he's a rental, I don't believe that the Astros farm system is capable of acquiring Shohei Ohtani. And I think the price for a Shohei Ohtani to be one of your young stars, potential stars, to like Hunter Brown in pieces, Jeremy Pena in pieces, the price would be extreme if you wanted to get Shohei Ohtani. And I think the conversation, quite honestly, starts with Hunter Brown, maybe Jeremy Pena.
Yeah, and I think because of the fact that we know they're still trying to replenish and build back up their farm system, and you look at the other teams that might be involved in this, the Dodgers may or may not go for it and get him ahead of time, but the Dodgers are probably going to end up with him at the end of the year or be one of the teams that, you know, tries to be the highest bidder. And the Yankees are going to probably be involved too. And they're going to throw their checkbooks around and they're going to, you know, go back and forth and duke it out. And it's going to be a big time sweepstakes. If a team wants to get the leg up, get them comfortable, get them in the dugout and get them understanding, you know, kind of how you do business so that maybe it means something when negotiations start, so be it. But when you get those two teams involved, you know, the price is going to be high. That's not something the Astros should be thinking about. This isn't Bryce Harper of a couple years ago when they were trying to make that move with Washington. This is a much bigger scale, much more worldwide talent that's going to have a ton of impact. And I don't think they're going to, I don't think they have the pieces, nor should they, to get involved.
Interested is one thing. Like, if I'm Dana Brown, I'm calling
just
to see what the price tag is. I don't think that they have the pieces because I really do think it would cost Hunter Brown.
I was thinking
Drew Gilbert, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's going to cost two of those three guys plus sweeteners. Hunter Brown, Jeremy Payne, Drew Gilbert, two of those three guys plus sweeteners. They might even ask for Kyle Tucker. Like, that's the price of what Shohei's going to cost you, even for 2 months of Shohei Ohtani.
And like you said, it's a rental. He's only going to be here for this year, and you're going to give up. And, of course, ideally, they'd love to get Pena on his current deal because then you would assume that you have Rendon back at third base, and you still have Trout, and you've got enough pieces to where they can still stay relevant. And keep trying to figure the rest of it out. But it seems like the owner in Anaheim is almost leaning more towards a complete rebuild. And then you wonder what happens to Trout and or Rendon, because I don't think everybody would love to have Trout, but at that price, it's going to change people's minds.
Uh-huh.
And Rendon is completely overpaid for what he's been doing since he's been in Anaheim. So he has one more valuable commodity after Ohtani, but they got to do whatever they can. They got to get whatever they can for Ohtani because he isn't going to be back. And I told you, my brother-in-law was astutely pointing out and telling me that all the Angels promotions with bobbleheads and everything for Ohtani end in July because they know that chances are better than anything else. He's going to be playing somewhere else by August.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see if he's traded because I would be very curious of the price of Shohei Ohtani. As far as excuses, I hate excuses. 3403 says excuse, the roof air knocked it down. Not familiar with that excuse a whole lot.
Ozuna in Atlanta might have thought that yesterday.
Yeah. And he hit one. Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah,
he completely showboated at the plate, and then it didn't get out.
He's been crushing the baseball, by the way.
Then they sat him down, which
yeah.
I like Snitker at least sitting him down.
Yeah, they did sit him down. He's been one of the best bats in baseball the last few weeks. I'm not a big fan of excuses. I hate excuses. Like, don't lie to me. Like, just if you have bad news, just deliver me to the bad news. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. I can take it. Don't give me the excuses. Don't give me the whole workaround. Let me know what is going on. What is your least favorite excuses? What excuses do you hate? In the same vein of Astros using the word discomfort and look at the back of the baseball card.
I mean, the big thing too for me is, as much as the Astros, you know, it's been a hot button with me, but The discomfort when the master, it doesn't take an in-depth baseball fan to figure out when something's really wrong with someone. Like, there's times when gamesmanship's important and you don't want teams across the league to know that, you know, a guy might be done for the year. You might have to shut him down for the playoffs. But otherwise, if you see a really bad injury or you know the way a player pulls up lame, that it's probably going to be something significant and the signs are there. Don't tell me it's purple when we can all clearly tell it's yellow or blue. Like, that's what bothers me the most about when the Astros do it. I mean, I was thinking about more so just the overall excuse that NBA players used before they went into load management when it became okay. Plantar fasciitis, we were talking about it because Correa's on the IL with it.
No, he's not on the IL.
He's missing games with it. But in the NBA, it used to be the unwritten rule. If you got a guy that's a healthy scratch, plantar fasciitis. Then people started actually getting plantar fasciitis and realizing how painful it is and that it's a legit injury, and then it started to change. But that was always the laughing stock in the league, was if someone's got plantar fasciitis, they're just taking the game off.
Yeah, I think you see one a lot of times, like, oh, my meeting. I have a meeting at 3 o'clock now, so I can't, I can't meet with you anymore. Oh, okay. Yeah, that just so all of a sudden popped up, huh? 713-780-ESPN. What excuses do you hate? 7869 says get a backup infielder bat in case of an injury. If that's the biggest splash that the Astros make at the trade deadline, I'm not going to say it's a loss, because it's not really a loss unless you know what the trade was. Sometimes the best trades are the ones that you don't make. I don't think that that's a route that the Astros have to go. Like, Mauricio Dubon, best case scenario is that utility infielder. If everybody else stays healthy, Mauricio Dubon plays that super utility role. It is interesting they brought up Craig Kessinger and not David Hensley. But David Hensley can't hit. Have you seen David Hensley's like under 200 in the minors?
It's not like J.J. Mattejevic, who went down and started ripping the cover off of it and was having quality at bats. Yeah, I don't know what happened to Hensley, but it's bad.
Yeah, he's not performing very well with the spacers. He's starting to look like he's not a big leaguer. And it would have made a lot more sense for the Astros to bring up Hensley. That way they don't have to create room on the 40-man. You don't start Kessinger's clock. Not that he's a huge prospect that you're really worried about that. Hensley's the natural move, but Hensley's been so bad that it's forced the Astros to bring up Kessinger instead of Hensley, because Hensley's been awful. 3403, does Caesar Salad get sitting down mean less playing time for Yiner?
We talked about the fact that Dusty's not a big fan of kind of the way he handles himself completely behind the plate, and indirectly he's been making us aware of that, but I think he has no choice now. And we were wondering for a while, we thought Salazar would be one of the first guys to send back to Sugarland, and he hung on longer than at least I personally thought that he would be around. But now you have no choice, and that Yiner's going to be behind the plate for some of the guys that he's caught the most. With his bat the way it is, too, I think that you just need to spend some more time working on the things you want him to get better at if you're Dusty Baker and his staff, realizing that the bat's too good to keep out of the lineup.
Yeah, I don't know how it means more playing time, though. Because if Maldi is going to start certain percentage of games behind the plate, which Dusty's committed to that, that means that Yiner's not going to start more games catching. And now that there's not the third catcher, which I don't think that the Astros were great with how they used the third catcher, right. I don't think that Yiner Diaz is going to get starts at first. I don't think Yiner Diaz is going to get starts at DH whenever now you don't have that emergency third catcher on the bench. I don't think it leads to more playing time.
I'm thinking that he had a better chance of picking up an extra starter when we were talking about between now and the end of the regular season. How do you get him ready? Well, now that he can catch France and he can catch Brown and now he can catch Blanco, now you've got three starters that he's worked with before, mm-hmm. that would make some real legit sense to get him an extra day catching behind the dish. I just don't know that Dusty feels comfortable doing that consistently.
Dusty feels like Maldonado, though, is going to lower those pitchers' ERA.
Right.
Like, he feels like he's going to help those guys through a start and give up fewer runs than they would if Yiner Diaz was
framing,
behind the plate.
Psychology and everything else, he's going to be responsible for saving a run or two.
I think it's mostly the pitch calling. Honestly, like, I think that he views Martin Maldonado as an elite pitch caller more than anything else, because I don't really see it, like, for the pass balls and wild pitches and blocking, things like that. I think Maldi's a little better than Yiner. Yiner's had some struggles there behind the plate lately. The pop time, the arm, like, Yiner's actually had better pop times and arms than Martin Maldonado. The framing, I think Maldi's a little overrated when it comes to framing.
But
I hate when
Maldi
a catcher
can call a game from the dugout if you want him to.
That does not happen in Major League Baseball, though. Like, no one does that.
I think Maldi, a lot of times, between every pitch, he's looking at somebody in the dugout. Obviously, he's making the final decision on it, but he is, every single pitch, you see him looking at somebody in that dugout, where I think there's a collaboration on pitch calling.
I would be shocked if anybody in the dugout is calling a pitch. Like, Major League Baseball catchers call pitches.
I just think if you watch Maldi behind the dish,
he looks in the dugout. He does.
After every single pitch. And I've always assumed that he was looking.
A lot of it's like defensive placement, though. Like, a lot of it's like, hey, we want him to go here. And he's like waiting for that to happen before he calls a pitch.
I've also, it's not unheard of to think that there's coaches that get involved in the pitch call.
I think in Major League Baseball, it is unheard of. For a pitching coach to call pitches during a game. 713-780-ESPN. Ocho says, I don't like when every poor performance in any sport's attributed to fatigue. Sometimes the other team player is just better. That is one time. You do hear that quite a bit. Like, especially in the postseason. Oh, we just ran out of gas. Oh, we just got tired. Sometimes you just get beat. E says, I love flu-like symptoms, a.k.a. hungover.
That's a good one.
You do get that one a lot in the NBA.
I think the altitude's a good one.
The altitude is...
For the Heat game one. It's the altitude.
Okay, I thought you were going baseball there.
No, I was thinking, like, just when anyone plays in Denver, it's always the excuse.
Yeah.
When the Broncos were, like, rolling with Manning and Russell, or not Russell Wilson, but, like, the Peyton Manning era.
Yeah.
Even, like, when Tim Tebow had success for, like, that 7-game win streak, it's like, oh, at the altitude.
Yeah, it got different. To us.
Just got to him.
I'll tell you what, it's a real deal.
Oh, it's definitely real, but it's just, like, it's just the oldest excuse in the book whenever you lose in Denver.
Yeah.
It's never about the play. It's always about the altitude.
You would have beat them anywhere else except for Denver.
Yeah, for sure.
That's usually it. Yeah, you play in a neutral site, we would have got them. 713-780-ESPN. You can continue to send those. We'll sprinkle them out. What your favorite excuses? It could be sports, it could be non-sports. 713-780-3776. Is it more reasonable for the Rockets to have a Nuggets or a Heat build? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are oftentimes presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So I was looking at Twitter over the weekend. ESPN 97.5 had this tweet that was promoting the bullpen on Saturday. Joe George and Andrew Carlson, I believe, was hosting on Saturday, right? And then yesterday it was BMAC, RJ, I'm missing somebody?
Mapes.
In Mapes, that's right. So I'm looking at this, Blankers, and, you know, Joe does the tweet from the station account, kind of giving a little bit of a peek behind the curtain, like what to expect on the show, what's coming up. And last week, I put in the rundown. I said, what exactly did I say? I think, I mean, you just look at the Twitter. It's verbatim of what I had.
Is this what you meant when you said number four is curious to
yes.
me or something like that?
Yeah, yeah, a little bit of an Easter egg there. Let me try to find the exact tweet.
This is what Joe does.
Yeah, so he said that he says that he doesn't do this.
No,
but I caught him red-handed.
I don't do this.
Joe, I mean...
You kind of do.
Do I need to get Andrew?
RJ tweets a lot.
We are a stepping stone to your higher aspirations.
So you
want to be a program director, so you take segments off so
here's
that you
the
can
deal.
Get in meetings.
So I get where you're going with this.
So here's what I put in the rundown last... I did this Friday. I did this on Friday. I put in the rundown Friday. A little peek behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Blankers and I will throw things on the rundown, and so we don't argue because we tend to do that. Joe will be the mediator and kind of like put things in place, which a lot of times we just blow right through anyways. But anyways...
Fact.
Because we can't be controlled. Like, most people think we can be corralled and kind of like be puppeted. We actually can't.
No.
But anyways, we put in the the rundown the other day, Friday. I put, can the Nuggets be a model for the Rockets? Question, good open-ended question, you know, something to kick around for 12 to 13 minutes. If sometimes 17 minutes, that's when Joe gets really mad at us. And so I put that in the rundown on Friday. And then we didn't talk about it on Friday. Didn't come up on Friday. We were having too much fun. And I open up Twitter on Saturday, and it says, topic number four, can the Nuggets be a model for the Rockets? I'm like, that is verbatim of what I typed in on Friday. So I just kind of, you know, responded back. I go with that fourth topic, eyes emoji. It caught my attention. So, Joe George, do you want to explain yourself?
Yes, I do. What we're going to realize here, Joel,
is that... Oh, me. What am I? I'm Judge Wapner now?
No. So what we realize is that maybe Jeremy's obsession with Andrew is maybe it's mutual.
That was Andrew's topic?
Because I did not drive the show on Saturday or put a single thing on the rundown.
Lazy bones.
I put zero effort.
Can we verify that?
So you didn't put anything in the rundown. That was totally Andrew's topic.
Andrew was going to lead the show, so he built
out the
rundown.
Doesn't matter if he's going to lead it or not, because Jeremy leads, but we both put stuff on the rundown. So can he verify that he put it on there?
Yes.
Go get him right now. I would like to know that, because this is verbatim. In fact, I changed the topic today because I saw this on the rundown for the bullpen on Saturday. It says, can the Nuggets be a model for the Rockets?
The uses us.
Yeah.
And realizes we could do a show without a producer, so he takes segments off.
Yep.
The same way that he looks to try and advance his career by talking more about the bullpen than he ever talks about us.
Right.
Now he's actually stealing stuff from us.
He talks to people more than he talks to us during the show.
I mean, he was giggling madly during the last segment. I was like,
you don't need headphones.
Were you having fun? And what was going on? He's like, oh, yeah, me and Mapes were just cutting it up. Well, so are we. We were doing it on the air.
That's great. I bet you Mapes didn't. Do you and Mapes ever cut it up from 10 to 2 or 10 to noon?
Yes, sometimes we do.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised by that. So AC's in studio. He's flexing his arm.
I'm between you guys so that Jeremy doesn't try and slide over.
Here's Andrew. So was this your topic? Can the Nuggets be a model for the Rockets?
First it was, can the Nuggets be a blueprint for the Rockets? It wasn't model. It was a blueprint. Those were my words. That was the topic I put at the end of the show.
So who drafted the tweet?
Joe drafted
the tweet.
There
you go. I caught him.
I just changed the word.
No, I put the entire rundown together.
He put the rundown. He put a similar topic, but
Joe,
he used my
so
words.
So Joe just put the tweet out after I put the rundown together.
Yeah.
So Joe took a quick look at the rundown, selected the topics that he liked the most, and put them in the tweet to tease the show.
So your topic was, can the Nuggets be a blueprint for the Rockets?
Correct.
So, it really was your idea, but Joe just stole word for word what I also had to run down.
Joe doesn't have to do the research. He doesn't have to do the research for a Saturday show when he knows that we've already had it there for him to understand what to say and research it for our show.
Yeah. AC, do you think that the amount of time that you've just spent talking with us will be more time than you talk from 3 to 7?
Probably pretty close. I would put it I put it over at this point.
All right, we appreciate your work.
Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate everything that you do. That is kind
this
of funny. Is though.
This
that is kind
semantics,
of funny.
Yeah.
See, I
model versus blueprint. Now that he says it,
I just think like if I didn't have that in the rundown, I don't think that you would have worded it that way.
Did you see the way you backtracked from the microphone?
I think you're right.
When you got caught,
he knew you got caught.
You were the one that did the tweet.
I think you're right. Now that he said blueprint,
you wouldn't have had that impression in your mind for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But
so
what
you write sticks with me, Jeremy.
That is funny though that he came up with that all on his own.
I know.
Not that he's not capable of doing that. He's more than just good looks.
Well,
but. It's just kind of funny we had the same
every
thought.
Every single time Andrew puts a topic on the rundown that's similar to something that we didn't talk about, we're definitely going to talk about it.
Is it out of the realm of possibilities that the same way they get their show topics by being in our Twitch, that someone might have some access to get to our rundown just to find out what we're talking about?
It doesn't look like it. No? I don't think so. Okay. No. Because I think that based on who's filling in for the day.
I'm not sure, actually.
Because I just pulled it up. Like I think we dropped them whenever they're no longer working with us.
No,
like Brendan, when we fired him.
No. We had an incident where there was someone peeping on our rundown.
Yep. Who was doing that?
I don't even remember, to be honest.
That's a lie. You know who it was.
I don't know.
I'll be honest. I have no idea what you're talking about. Like sometimes,
it was when you were out.
Sometimes what do we call Brandon? What do we call Jack? The social guys?
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do we call them?
The
multimedia
the
guys?
Team.
The digital team. There we go. That's the word. The digital team. Sometimes the digital team, which I noticed that they're not on here now, the digital team would a lot of times would go in there and check to see what we're doing, which is fine.
Because
like,
they want to know if there's something things. They could, yeah, they could
yeah. But I've never,
multi-purpose.
I've never noticed like another host or a producer like peeping into the rundown.
Yeah, well, that's just Twitch.
It did happen last week. I don't know if you were.
Did it really?
It was, or it was 2 weeks ago. It was when you were on remote.
Who was doing it?
Honestly, I don't remember.
Wow.
How did they get in?
They had filled in some. It wasn't Patrick.
Paul?
There's someone that filled in. They were just like in our thing. I kicked them out.
Was it Josh? I think it was Joshua.
Oh, maybe it was Josh.
I think it was Joshua. I do remember that actually. But I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he like left it up.
He was probably preparing for the bullpen on Saturday
maybe,
and Sunday.
Maybe he was preparing for the bullpen. It is funny though. AC does have a future after all, coming up with these great segment ideas, I must say. Can the Nuggets be a model for the Rockets?
Well, if you're going to find the Joker in the second round for the Rockets, that would be a good place to start. Because, yeah, you can draft a guy like Murray and have him turn out. And you can – I mean, look, they've made some really good draft picks in the fact that they took Porter Jr. with a back injury and took a flyer where a lot of teams were hesitant and eventually had to get that back injury fixed. But now they got themselves a hell of a player. Murray turned into being a hell of a player. So they drafted well. I think the move that was very savvy was the Gordon trade because they got a very athletic big that's versatile.
People feel like they overpaid for him, both what they gave up and what they pay him.
No question, but he's fit so well with the Joker that, you know, that chemistry means something because not everybody can fit with a center that's also bringing the ball up the court and playing from the high post. And then they got really good key acquisitions when we're talking about the Rockets looking for veterans. But getting a guy like Caldwell Pope that just fits beautifully because all you need to do is just sit and make jump shots. And some of the guys that they have, Jeff Green, or especially during the regular season, can be that backup when either Gordon or Porter Jr. go down or need rest. They're deep. They're talented. But the key that makes it all go, as we know, is the Joker. And they got him in the second round. And you don't find second round picks that turn out to be maybe one of the top three best players in the world.
I don't think that Şengün's going to be Jokic. I don't think that. Şengün's first 2 years in the NBA have produced better numbers than Jokic's first 2 years in the NBA. And people love Şengün's offensive game. They think that he could develop not to be Jokic, but to be like all-star quality offense. And like when you look at Denver, like they have two stars and a lot of really good role players across the board. I'm not saying that Şengün's going to be Jokic. I'm not saying that Jalen Green can be another superstar. But I think that they have a build that's more similar to Denver than Miami.
Well, yeah, because Miami, you get so many guys that, you know, are diamonds in the rough. So many undrafted guys that they've uncovered that have turned out to be not just role players, but significant players. When you look at Martin and you look at Vincent and you look at, you know, Duncan Robinson, you're looking at guys that aren't just soaking up minutes or spelling a starter. They're coming up with significant minutes that are difference makers. And that's so hard to find when you find the amount of times Miami's been able to do that. And it takes a really savvy basketball staff to be able to do that, and you got to do it over time. Is it possible? Sure. But I think it's, as much as you think it's impossible to find a player of Jokic's caliber in the second round, it may be more challenging to find eight guys that were undrafted that all play significant roles.
I think that might be more challenging.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird to say that, but it's true. I actually agree with that. What were you going to say, Joe George?
To me, the biggest thing were like the model or blueprint, whatever one you want to go with today, that the Rockets can follow is that the Nuggets, if they were most organizations, probably would have fired Michael Malone like 2 years ago. Like, you look at what the Phoenix Suns, 76ers, Raptors, like all these teams have done. Like, they would have viewed their last couple seasons as a failure by now, even though they had injuries and all these issues. Like, they couldn't get over the hump, but they stuck with Michael Malone and they kept like the guy in charge who they thought was the right fit. And like, that to me is the key, is that like, even if you don't succeed right away with Ime Udoka, you know you probably have the right coach. And you don't bail early. Like, stick through with what you have. But you also have to develop these guys. Because, like, Jamal Murray, when he got paid, it looked like a bad contract. But he's really developed into, like, a great basketball player.
Well, people forget in the bubble because people had so many other things going on in their lives that they didn't worry about. But before the ACL, he was absolutely unbelievable. And that was he and Jimmy Butler's year in the bubble to just show out. But no one really saw it. And then he tore the ACL, and it took him longer than most to come back from it. And a lot of people didn't know if he was actually going to be even close to the player he was before it. And now all of a sudden the switch is flipped. He feels great again, looks great again, and is playing great again. And you see what a true talent he is. And I think that that's been obviously a huge key. But to your point on the coaches, That's why I keep saying it, all the parallels between the Texans and the Rockets. Like, they should have bailed earlier on Silas, but they just realized they weren't at a time to feel the extra urgency to try and win more games because they still controlled their pick and they were trying to get as much young talent as possible. But now that they have Udoka, I think that's where you've got to change your philosophy, your focus, and you've got to get him. And I think you're starting to see this, where Stone is actually kind of taking a step back and basically saying to Udoka, what kind of players do you need to make your system work on both ends of the floor? And let's look for that instead of just trying to find these diamonds in the rough or get this young talent to just because they're supposed to be drafted at a certain spot, you take them.
To Joe's point, I think the Rockets will do that with Udoka. Like, I feel like they are giving him the keys to the organization and giving him the runway to where even if they lose 50 games for the next two seasons, that they're committed to Udoka for the long term. And I think it's a good call. Like, I do believe in continuity in sports, especially if you feel like you have the right guy. Even whenever the results aren't there, you stick with the right guy. See, I mean, the Steelers did it for years.
But that's what I'm saying. Two different case scenario, but they gave Silas too much time. But I also don't think that there was ever a... I don't think there was ever a thought of thoughts that he was going to be the guy that take you long term.
No, I don't think so either. But did they, like, what's the difference between this offseason and last offseason? Like, I don't think that the Rockets were there yet.
They weren't there yet, but you wanted a guy that was at least keeping the ship afloat. And while it was keeping the ship afloat, you were starting to develop and make some inroads with some of the development of some of the players.
Yeah, that's true. Like, if you lost something here player development-wise because of Silas that you could have gotten with somebody else, that's a loss. That is a loss. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. It could be about the Rockets. It could be about the Astros. It could be, can you peek the curtain more on what Joe George steals from the Killer Bees? You can ask us about food. Andrew Carlson's dating life. Whatever you want to ask us now. This is your moment to shine. 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One company that is always shining is Pinnacle Construction. Are you like me? Are you thinking about improving your home? My wife's been saying we got to do tons of things with our house this summer. She's talking about expanding the mudroom, the patio, the outside. Well, Pinnacle Construction can handle all of that. Pinnacle Construction is for you in its peak time. Have a plan to enhance your living space. You'll love it. Your spouse will love it. Your kids will love it. Just want something fresh, creating a new look? How about a kitchen remodel? How about a bathroom remodel? Whatever you can dream of, Pinnacle Construction can do. From flooring to cabinets, new paint job. How about that pool? Gets pretty hot in Houston. Over the summer, pool would cool off a lot of people. Whatever you can dream of, Pinnacle Construction can do. Pinnacle Construction, the name you need to know. A general contractor with decades of experience that will help with any kind of repair. You dream it, they do it. You've been waiting for the right people, someone you can trust, not charge you through the roof. Well, that's Pinnacle Construction. Doug Johnson is the owner of Pinnacle Construction. He's a native Houstonian serving all of the greater Houston area for over two decades. Doug and his team guarantees quality in-house work, licensed and insured with stellar customer service for every project and every customer. Get your free estimates with a qualified Pinnacle Construction technician now. You have nothing to lose. Call to see how much it is. You don't like the number? You don't have to do it. Call or text 281-900-3004, 281-900-3004. To get your free estimates right now. Financing options are available, and you can ask for the ESPN discount as well, because we love you. Pinnacle Construction, born and building in Texas with over 20 years of general contracting experience.
You've got mail.
It's Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
Something's in the bag.
Mommy? Mommy?
What's in the bag?
What's in the box?
All right, Killer Bees, Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Bees whatever you want. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. Get your questions into the Killer Bees, 713-780-3776. King of Twitch is saying, what's your favorite po' boy?
I mean, I don't know that there are, like, choices.
It sounds
like
to me
Subway.
Like you don't like po' boys.
I don't know that it's not that I don't like them.
Gare.
You Gator boys?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
My cousin lives in New Orleans, and like I'd never had Gator before. We went one time when I was in college, and we went back last year for her wedding.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, I couldn't stop. Gator and crawfish.
I've never had a Gator po' boy.
So
but
good.
I would be more than willing to try. That sounds pretty solid. To me, you can't go wrong with any of the seafoods. Like, give me I mean, oyster po' boy. I don't even, like, love oysters.
I've never done the oyster.
Fine. Fried oyster po' boy.
Shrimp.
Or you like, yeah, absolutely.
Shrimp's super good.
Shrimp's the go-to. Like, I usually get a half and half. Usually it's, like, shrimp and either a catfish or either an oyster.
I mean, I really like the fried crawfish.
Fried crawfish oysters are fine. Crawfish, to me, I just like regular crawfish. Like, that's how I eat crawfish.
Yeah.
I don't really want it fried. I don't need it in an etouffee. Just give me a nice little crawfish boil.
The fishy fish taste, that's why I'll shrimp more times than not is what I would go to. Yeah. I'm not big on crawfish. I'm not big on oysters for sure, no.
Really?
I'll eat some raw oysters. I never go out of my way to order them, but I'll eat them. Mm-hmm. I'll eat them if they're around. But I prefer my oysters either, like, fried on a po' boy, or you get some, like, some of those, they usually call them, like, Oyster Rockefeller or the char-grilled oysters from, like, Acme. Those are unbelievable.
Yeah, I like them just straight up.
Or you can go to Drago's up in New Orleans. They call that the best bite in New Orleans. They're char-grilled oyster. It's got all the flavors of New Orleans. It's fantastic.
There's this one bar I used to go to down the street. They have an oyster shooter.
Okay, yeah.
So there's an oyster in there, and it's a shot of a Bloody Mary.
No, thanks.
It's good.
Doesn't sound
good. It's real good.
I would do it. 713-780-ESPN. What is your what are your questions for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. Day one, Donna. What are y'all's thoughts about Case Keenum's quarterback camp at U of H?
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was good that he had one. I think that it's great that, you know, he said he's spending time with the U of H quarterbacks, and he's happy to be back home. I mean, what kind of thoughts are we? I love Donna, but I'm not sure what other thoughts you're supposed to have about that.
He had thoughts.
There was tons of thoughts. Davis, how did he not have thoughts? Yeah, he had some takes.
Oh, you're talking about his takes. I thought camp itself.
No, she was talking about the camp itself. But one thing I've learned this weekend is that Texans quarterbacks have spicy
several
takes.
Quarterbacks had thoughts. I mean, yes,
he was talking about Tank. And how much that he thinks Tank's going to be good in the NFL, which he thinks he's going to be really good. Which, I mean, Case is probably going to bat for his teammates. He also liked Davis Mills. Now, Davis Mills was at his camp, so he probably wanted to say something nice to his camp counselors. But he talked about how big of a hose that Davis Mills had. Is it possible? Like, I'm not saying that Davis Mills is going to beat out CJ Stroud at all. Like, but injuries happen. Is it possible that Davis Mills looks way better in this offense with Bobby Slowick, with Gerard Johnson, with a much better offensive scheme than he did in the past?
Is it possible? Sure.
I think it happens.
I think it's possible because he had so little to work with last year. And he basically had guys that seemed like they were more overmatched and panicked than they were quality offensive quarterback-minded coaches. And I think it's definitely possible. And, you know, then you start going back to the school of thought of where he was drafted, otherwise where he could have been drafted, and the fact that people saw talent in him, and maybe there's something that still can be saved and developed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's going to, if he plays, I think he's going to look okay.
So is it possible that he's the backup?
Oh, I think he is the backup. I've been adamant about
that. And Case is just here about.
Yeah, he's a veteran. He's
big brother.
He's a coach that's on the roster. Okay. I've been adamant that Davis Mills is the number two on this team. 713-780-3776, Mailbag Monday. Ocho asks, would you rather work for a boss who micromanages everything you do or a boss who never gives you any advice?
The boss that never gives me any advice.
You don't like to improve your craft?
Well, micromanaging is different than improving your craft. It's annoying, especially when it happens frequently.
I don't know, Jeremy. You used to work at a radio station, which you would get texts during segments about not talking enough Texans. Yeah, How'd you feel?
Don't say cutting Deontay Foreman was bad. Don't say that Jack Easterby's overqualified being a general manager when he's only the team chaplain.
Because we're closer to option B right now.
No, I'd rather
hands off.
I think that. Me personally, I think you're kind of the same way here, Blinkers. Like, you kind of challenge and motivate yourself and then also, like, look to hone your craft without guidance,
right,
like on your own. I much, much, much rather have a boss who never gives me any advice than a boss who micromanages.
And you were hired to do a job. So let me do my job.
Yeah.
Don't try to do the job for me. And not that I had the experience you had that Joe referenced, but I had a different sense of that when doing live games, I would get a tap on the shoulder or the back of my wrist snapped because I said something about some player that they might be interested in obtaining in 2 years, or I didn't, you know, give James Harden enough. I can't say that about James Harden. I need to say that the other guy is just killing whoever would have guarded him tonight when Harden was playing zero defense. Yeah. And you learn on the fly, and then you scratch your head and go, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good example there, Joe. I'd forgotten about it. Well, I didn't forget. But
I mean, when I got hired, I worked there for a year, and I went through a transition phase, so I heard all the horror stories like before I got there. It wasn't as bad when I
heard from
there.
Yeah, I heard from talent, too, that would send me copies of the text that said, do not talk Rockets today.
Oh, yeah, they said not to talk Rockets.
Yeah.
Texans, NFL, little bit of Astros, but no Rockets.
Yeah, micromanaging is tough.
No Rockets. I don't get really micromanaged at all anymore. Like, we get good advice here. U of H, I've never been told anything, honestly.
I was going to say, when we went through the initial
phase
with
that's a new show, though.
With the consultant.
Sense.
But they also told me I didn't say the number enough. And I think I say the number more than anybody in the history of radio.
Unless you're the most interactive sports talker.
You ever said second most interactive.
You ever say the name wrong number?
Have I?
You were the one to the highway to hell?
No, I've probably like said the number wrong, just like slipping over my words. But I've never given the wrong number. No. Have you?
Yeah, I almost did. I think the first time I filled in for you. Like, we're like 5 seconds into the show.
We should do that as a prank, though. Like, give, like, this terrible, like, segue and, like, terrible thing. Just give the wrong number.
I know once upon a time when I was here the first time, they used to do fake giveaways and give out the other station
numbers.
That's
hilarious. 713-780-3776. Don't do that to us. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 9723. Have your favorite sports team win a championship, but you can't watch a single game all season or watch every game and they lose the championship?
I'd still take watch every game and they lose the championship.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're not my favorite sports team because they're doing me I've said this to all the people that used to want to give me all kinds of crap about the Packers. You know what? They didn't win the Super Bowl, but they gave me more weeks that I could actually be happy and brought me joy because they won more games than they lost over an extended period of time.
Yeah.
To where I'm fine with that.
Let me go a little bit outside the box here. It depends on your age. Like, if I was, like, whenever I was younger, I'd probably rather have the championship and not watch every game. But now, where I don't get as moved as much based on wins and losses, like, I think I have a little bit more of, like, a, you know, even keel. Like, I don't really go nuts with wins and losses. Now, for sure, give me the team goes to the championship but loses, but I've watched every one. Because a lot of, like, the joy and entertainment of sports is to watch the grind and watch the season. Like, the fun of the Astros 2023. Can they overcome the pitching? Can they catch the Rangers? Can Abreu get it all figured out? Like, a lot of times the entertainment and the joy of the season are, like, the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows of the year.
Well, and you guys give me a hard time when I say I lose sleep if the Astros lose a game that I thought they should have won. That's when you truly know how much you really enjoy watching every game.
Or you have a screw loose. One of
them. No, because, I mean, look, and so it's the same way where, you know, don't call me, don't talk to me, and I don't want to see any of the highlights if the Packers lose a tight game. But the same way I feel like if the Astros blow a game, they should have won. I live and die with those teams. I love watching the games week to week.
Also, just like, what am I going to do with my life?
I know.
Like, if I can't watch my favorite baseball team,
I'm going to have to watch more Bravo.
For an entire summer, what am I going to watch?
The Housewives of New Jersey.
Brewers baseball?
Below Deck.
Like, because they're not saying you can't watch sports. You just can't watch your favorite team.
Right.
Vanderpump Rules. The reunion.
You got to fake a love of another team? Oh.
You done with Selling Sunset?
Yeah. A lot of drama.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what all those shows are.
My wife doesn't, she hasn't made me watch that one with her. Which, cool. I'm fine with it. Alex says, Branham doesn't get micromanaged, just gets his rundown stolen. Those are facts, Alex.
Look at Joe just cackling again.
All right, that does it for our Mailbag Monday. If you have any questions that we didn't get to, make sure you tweet them at Pac-Man Joel. 713-780-3776. Are we concerned at all about Jose Altuve? And Gray Kessinger, what do we need to know about the new Astro utility infielder that's only getting called up because David Hensley now stinks at baseball? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Welcome back to the Killer Bees Nuts, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and that Jeremy Branham guy.
Somebody just liked one of our tweets. His Twitter handle is Joe George's PR team. his handle is at...
No, it's not.
It's at the_Joe George. I'm looking at it right now. What do you mean, no, it's not? It says Joe George's PR team.
It actually does, by the way.
The Joe George.
What tweet is this? I don't see it.
I don't think they liked it.
They sent it to both of us.
You have a fan.
@_JoeGeorge is a thing. You might want to be aware of that.
Yeah. He's from Pittsburgh, PA. You know anybody in Pittsburgh? Your parents, maybe?
No.
You might have more followers than you.
It's a thing. Than Joe?
Yeah.
How many followers do you have, Joe?
Like 1,800 something.
Oh, so you got him.
You got him. 697. How many you have, Blankers?
I don't even know. I think over 7,000. Yeah, I mean, 7,000?
I think you and I are in the same wheelhouse. 713-780-ESPN. I noticed something passed on my timeline today. You know, it's Happy National Veggie Burger Day.
Well, it was regular burgers last week.
Was it?
Yeah.
How come veggies gets the short end of the stick? Why is it a week later? Will you be partaking in this tonight?
No.
No?
Veggie burgers?
You don't do veggie burgers? I think I did could, veggie burgers.
No. I mean,
will
I will say...
Blank be doing some veggie burgers?
What are we talking here?
Like, I'll tell you this, though. The Impossible Burgers are good.
Does it... I mean, wouldn't they all be... I don't know this world.
So my wife eats them. She gets the black bean burger.
Would that not be a veggie burger?
It's a veggie burger.
It is, but then there's like the ones that aren't... That's like the fake meat.
The Impossible Burgers.
Yeah,
burger.
That I think
is that
gross.
Not veggie burgers,
it's
though?
Soy and other protein. Yeah.
No, it is, but like the black bean burger.
Burgers.
Right.
But there's like, it's like two, almost like two cuts of meat, I guess you'd say.
Well, I don't think any of them are meat.
They're not meat. I don't know if you, yeah, no, know,
like,
if you
it's
know
like
that.
Two different versions. The black bean version's better.
Oh.
Oh, I see what happened here. Somebody, we had a fan that quote tweeted our ESPN 97.5 show preview. And it said, check out today's episode of The Killer Bees with Brian and Blankers. And then it added the wrong Joe George.
Oh, okay.
So that's what happened. You don't have a fan. It's just there's apparently another Joe
there's
George
another
in Pittsburgh,
Joe
Pennsylvania.
George?
Dude, his handle is Joe George's PR team.
I tried to buy @JoeGeorge. It's this. He's a high school teacher in Canada.
Oh, I try to buy it?
I DM'd him and like I asked him for it. And then I was like, I'll buy it from you. And then he's just like, nope. I was like, really?
How much did you offer?
I said, I'm open to talk about it. I said, whatever you want. Like, or like, let's like open. What's your, like, what would it take? Cause I was curious. Like, I thought maybe it'd be like $100.
Big ballin' like an NFL player that
no,
wants his number.
Like, I thought he asked, like, dude, he's a high school teacher. I figured I'd get it for like $50.
Yeah. It shouldn't cost much. Like if you're not,
you know. I got your classroom supplies for this year.
Exactly. Like I thought it was going to be like bare minimum.
Yeah, if you're not like a local minor celebrity, what's the point of even having a Twitter handle? You know, it doesn't really matter what your name is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't listen to your offers. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. Jose Altuve's missed the last two games. He's got a strained oblique. I'm not going to lie to you, Blankers. Whenever I saw, and this was Apollo Dez that I saw kind of tip everybody off on this, by the way. Mm-hmm. When I saw Apollo Dez kind of break the news that Gray Kessinger was coming up to the Astros, this was before the Berman tweet, which kind of it told you who he was coming up for. I thought for a split second, it might mean Jose Altuve was going to the IL. Turns out that Kessinger, the Astros haven't announced this, but Berman's saying sources are telling him that Kessinger's called up tonight. Christian Salazar is going to go back down to the minors, going to go back to being a spacer. But what is the concern level that we have about Jose Altuve's oblique injury?
I think it's a little bit more than just your average, you know, brush it under the rug and not worry about it at all, because he missed so much significant time to start the year with the thumb. You know how much better this ball club is with him in the lineup, and because he was red hot. He was really heating up. He was really looking like the old Altuve again, and you don't want a setback where we know he had to get his timing back. And so I don't want him missing enough time to where he then, aside from the time that you miss, now on a rehab stint, he's got to get his timing back. That's going to take a little while longer. And now before you know it, we're sitting more about the All-Star break, or we're getting later and later in the season. So, yeah, the minute I saw that he wasn't in the lineup, then I heard that it was legitimately they were concerned about an oblique injury. I'm like, oh, man, please, let's not make this, you know, missing any more significant time. So I think it's best case right now. Hopefully it doesn't turn into something worse.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about it for, like, long term at all. I think that he's going to be back. I think there's a decent chance he's going to be back today.
Well, he wouldn't have been taken infield if it was something really significant.
And I think they would have placed him on the IL if he was going to miss any more, like, if you get placed on the 10-day IL, you miss 10 games. The Astros are playing all these games in a row next off days next Monday. if you thought that Jose Altuve was going to miss every game of this upcoming road trip, you would have sent him to the IL. That would have been the move. But that's not what the Astros are doing. They're gonna send down Salazar. So I think we see Altuve in Toronto, whether it's tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday. I think we're going to see him in Toronto. I definitely think we're going to see him this week on the road trip. It goes to Toronto to Cleveland.
I even was watching when he was looking and pointing at Dusty and the coaching staff about he couldn't get to that ball Dubon got to. And I was like, oh, well, at least he's throwing his arms up in the air and he's moving around and didn't wince or anything. Like, hopefully it's nothing that, would limit him from doing that. When I saw him do that, I'm like, okay, looks like there's a lot of flexibility and movement. I like it.
The Astros have earned this, though. Like, for us to be, worried about the length or the severity of Jose Altuve's injury, and a lot of the clues are pointing that it's not a big deal, but the Astros, with how discreet that they are, and look, they choose to be this way. The only ones that are punished are, the fans. But because they do handle injuries that way, everybody is going to fearmonger whenever there is minor injuries like we're currently experiencing with Jose Altuve.
Plus, look at just this year alone with what we haven't seen Brantley at all. McCullers for the second straight year going through everything that he's going through. And you start to have those legitimate concerns with anybody. But when it's a significant enough player like Altuve, and because of their track record, now you're hyper concerned. No matter, it could be a hangnail, and you'd be like, "But how could that develop into something too?" Because you just never know with them.
Yeah, it's gonna. Greg Kessinger is gonna be called up. They drafted him out of Ole Miss a few years ago. Really hasn't had a great minor league career. He's not the super prospect. He's 25 years old. He gives them flexibility on the infield, can play every infield position, including the corners, where Mauricio Dubon hasn't played a ton of third base, has played no first base. So it gives the Astros some flexibility. He is having a good year in Sugar Land. He's hitting .284, .843 OPS. His career high prior to this year, though, was .232 batting average and .693 OPS. So, Kessinger isn't this super prospect that's going to, be the next Jeremy Peña. This is for positional flexibility. I'm excited for him. It'd be cool to see a new player for the Houston Astros. Quite frankly, he's only getting the call-up because David Hensley's been atrocious. David Hensley seems to be ruined for whatever reason. Otherwise, they would have just called him back up. Todd the Show is convinced that it's just to give Alex Bregman a day off today. And couldn't Mauricio Dubon play third base? He thinks that Dubon's going to play second, Kessinger's going to play third, and that was the reason why. I think Dusty Baker just wants another infield option. Whenever he was in a tough spot yesterday, last 2 days, Jose Altuve was the only infielder on the bench. Jose Altuve had a strained oblique that was supposed to be off because he was hurt. The Astros had zero infielders on the bench yesterday other than Jose Altuve. I thought it was a problem whenever they first did it. No, small problem, but a problem. And the way that the Astros have been using Salazar, not using Diaz enough to use Salazar as your third catcher, I'm surprised it wasn't the move then. And I think that's why it's the move now.
In looking at it, I thought a few weeks ago that it was surprising to me they were going to keep three catchers. And then it kind of came out a little bit more about Dusty maybe peeling back the curtain and not being overly pleased with Yainer Diaz behind the plate defensively and some of the things he was doing. But overall, I thought that the move to be made was to always make sure you had the extra infielder, because Dubon was going to possibly play outfield as well, but you knew that you were going to want guys to have days off during this stretch anyway. So I thought this was a move they should have made a couple weeks ago. Now, by the necessity with the Altuve, not being able to play, it's just even more important because you still, like you said, don't have a day off till next Monday.
6206, Yiner would probably be batting .250 with 10 homers, but Maldi will still get four starts a week. There's no doubt. Dusty values Martin Maldonado behind the dish like a second coach. There's no doubt about that.
I think it's more related to just as the receiver and defensively than it is about anything offensively, obviously. Because if it was offensively, he wouldn't have had Maldi out there last year.
No. He believes in Maldi as a pitch caller. There's no doubt. You think you want to see Yiner get more starts at first than Abreu?
Abreu hasn't been anything stellar defensively. If Yiner can prove that he can dig a couple of baseballs out of the dirt, and if a line drive is hit at him, he either can knock it down and make the play, or best case scenario, glove it and make the play, then I'm all for it. Because as much as we did, I think maybe we still underappreciated how good Yuli was at first base with the glove. You didn't really get that thrown in your face until you saw Abreu trying to play first base and make plays that Yuli made look routine. And so I don't think you're not talking about the same scenario anymore, because one, he's not hitting, and two, he can't play first defensively like Yuli did. So give someone else a chance, especially if he's still trying to find his way at the plate. Give him a chance to kind of stop pressing as much, though I think he's relaxed more. But more so than anything else, with what Dana Brown said about how many at-bats he wanted Yiner to get this season, give him some time at first base. It's not like he's not making the most of it yesterday.
I thought it was a little bit of a missed opportunity while you had three catchers here that you didn't DH Yiner and play Yiner at first as much, especially with the struggles of Abreu. I don't think you can do it as much now with Salazar down. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. C.J. Stroud listed his top five quarterbacks. Hot take. Hot take from C.J. Stroud. Who were his top five quarterbacks? Do we agree? Where did he get hot? Where did he get spicy with this take? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.